little too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sudden way.
Right. Hello, good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Thursday morning officially, and we are here until 4 a.m., keeping you company, keeping you informed, and helping you get through it, and we're going to get through it together. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. That's where we are. 312-981-7200 is the number that you can call. We would love to hear from you. We are going to be talking about some great rock memoirs. Frank Sinatra passed away on this date in 1998, so we're going to talk about Sinatra and play a little of his music and talk about his career. And he was a legend, obviously. Right now, we would like to welcome to the show, for his biweekly visit, Dan Feinberg. Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he joins us every couple of weeks to talk about TV. So let's say hello to Dan. Dan, how you holding up?
Been better, been worse, you know, one day at a time. If you say it's Thursday, I have no choice but to believe you.
It is here. You still got, I think you still have a couple of hours before it becomes Thursday where you are.
I do, but I couldn't necessarily have exactly told you what day it was before you said that, or before yesterday, or anything. It's all just a blur, and
yeah.
I guess we all have to make our peace with that. And in California, they say that the stay-at-home regulations are likely to continue through possibly August or further, so good times.
Yeah, well, we got to do what we got to do, but at least there's TV.
There is so much TV.
Yeah.
I mean, really and truly, an almost unreal amount, which, again, is for the best for me and what I do.
Yeah, yeah, keeping busy. I got to say, did you watch, have you caught up with last night's episode of What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes, that was the Jackie Daytona episode.
Yeah,
that
yeah, that's exactly what it was, yes. I was beside myself during it. I thought it was so hilarious, and I thought Mark Hamill was great. You know, Mark Hamill makes an appearance in it. I laughed my butt off at that episode. I love that show. I think the show is great, but last night's episode, really, I was beside myself.
I thought it was a great episode. I thought this season has, in general, been a more consistent, even season than the first season. I've been enjoying it very much.
Yeah, it's terrific. It was so, so funny. If you haven't caught up on it, you can watch it on FX Now or on Hulu, or I think they put it on Hulu the next day, if I'm not mistaken. But it was really, I mean, like, laugh out loud funny. Like, really, really funny. So, I did not watch, and I can't believe I missed it, but I think it's available. It's actually, you said it, Tom, you said it's on Hulu, right? I missed The Happy Days of Gary Marshall. I don't know how I have no idea how that got by me, but I know it's now available on Hulu, and I think it's available on demand, and I'm definitely going to watch it. I don't know how this got past me. Talk about this incredible tribute to, Gary Marshall.
Yep. So Gary Marshall, of course, passed away 4 years ago, I guess. And this was just ABC paying tribute to someone who obviously had a rather significant impact at the network with Happy Days, Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley, etc. And it's just a two-hour tribute with loved ones, all the members of his family, his wife of many, many, many years, etc., plus as many of the stars as basically are available came out to talk about his shows, his movies, and so that includes people like Julia Roberts, obviously Richard Gere, Anne Hathaway, Henry Winkler, Ron Howard, Pam Dauber, and it was just a really good, well-produced 2 hour special to someone who, you know, has obviously shaped entertainment in a very, very significant way, even if maybe he doesn't get the credit that some people do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he basically, what was it? Tuesday nights was all him, I think, on ABC, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he, and so it goes through his career. It talks about what brought him out to Hollywood in the first place, and talks about the journey that Happy Days had, where it was initially a pilot that wasn't going to go forward, that played as an episode of Love American Style, and then was recalibrated as the show that we knew, and then it launched its spinoffs, and what those spinoffs represented to him, and then what his movie career was like when he started, and you know, started with Young Doctors in Love, which gets a little bit of time. I was somewhat disappointed they did not spend as much time on Flamingo Kid as they should. To me, that's his best movie.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I love that movie.
And I think probably the problem realistically is that, you know, maybe they couldn't get Matt Dillon to do it, and otherwise Richard Crenna passed,
yeah.
And so there just weren't enough big enough stars basically to justify the screen time. That's my best guess for why it wasn't discussed. But so that was a minor disappointment. But mostly they cover a lot of the good stuff. Even the bad stuff is sort of acknowledged, and you know, people talk about how much fun they had on all of those holiday movies he made towards the end.
Yeah.
Valentine's, Mother's Day, New Year's Day, whatever they all are.
So but I mean, he had an incredible career. Did they talk with Penny Marshall?
Obviously she also died before.
Oh, she did. Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. Why did I completely forgot that she passed away.
But they, you know, there's at least one interview with her from, I think, a 2004 interview that she did. So, you know, certainly she's acknowledged, and obviously, you know, she was important to his career in on many levels, whether it's Laverne and Shirley being, you know, his sister and all, you know, League of Their Own, which didn't get mentioned, unfortunately. I would have loved for some of his acting roles to have gotten the acknowledgement that they deserved, because he was also an extremely funny character actor.
He,
so that might have been something that was left out.
He kills me in Soap Dish. He's so funny in Soap Dish. It's a brief role, small role, but man, does he kill it. And of course, you know, what can you say about that scene in the casino from Lost in America? I mean, genius. You know,
the scene in Lost in America would be my first example of how good he could be as an actor. But no, he was a character all on his own, and one of the pleasures of the documentary is everybody doing their Gary Marshall impression, and so Henry Winkler's is probably the best of them, but everyone has one. In fact, it's over the closing credits, I think, you know, seven different people do their Gary Marshall impressions.
That's
because,
great.
You know, he was easily impersonatable, or he was enjoyably impersonatable, not necessarily easily.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to watch it. I really can't. The Happy Days of Gary Marshall. I have no idea how it got past me, but I'm definitely going to catch up with it. Dan, hang on, okay?
It's really satisfying. It's good stuff.
Okay, hang on, Dan. There we go. Dan Feinberg is here, and we're talking TV. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m., keeping you company, keeping you informed, and helping you get through this, and we are all going to get through this together. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we talk biweekly about TV. Okay, Dan, we got a lot more TV to talk about, things that you've reviewed. We're going to Netflix for this documentary called Becoming, which I think we all know what that's about. So let's talk about that.
Yes, I would suspect your local listeners have some awareness of the Obama family of Chicago.
Yes,
I believe that anyone who watched The Last Dance would have seen Barack Obama identified as former Chicago resident. So
yes.
So yes. So anyone who follows the Obamas to any particular degree knows that Becoming is also the title of Michelle Obama's memoir, which came out 2 years ago, I guess. And she did a lengthy, multi-city, moderated speaking tour / promotional circuit for the book. And it was filmed for Netflix. And the Obamas, of course, have a production shingle at Netflix that produced last year's Oscar-winning documentary American Factory and this year's Sundance opening Crip Camp. This is, however, the first of their shingles productions to actually focus on the Obamas, which of course makes it a bit of a lightning rod and means that if you tweet about it to any degree, you're going to get many, many hostile people coming to say hi to you on Twitter and say not so nice things about the Obamas and whatnot. And it's an okay documentary. On an actual documentary and documentary storytelling level, it is okay. If you are someone who is a fan of Michelle Obama and a fan of the Obamas, you will doubtlessly find it inspiring. And if you are someone who is a detractor, you will doubtlessly find it annoying. And I can't imagine anybody coming out of watching the 90 minutes of Becoming feeling appreciably different than when they began. And that's just what it is. I thought there were a lot of good moments. There were a lot of emotional moments. There were a lot of inspiring moments. I don't think they had much to do with the actual storytelling of the documentary, but I personally find Michelle Obama to be fairly inspiring. That is my own personal feeling. People need not feel that way if they don't want to. It's her going and meeting with people. She likes to meet with school children. She likes to meet with small groups of young people outside of school settings. She likes to talk about what they can become. And so to me, that's inspiring. There's very little that's actually political in this particular documentary. It's not overwhelmingly ideological, except that, of course, inevitably it is. It's only 90 minutes. To me, I think probably a more focused documentary actually could have been a series, because there are these brief moments where the director follows one or two of these kids who Michelle Obama was just talking to and shows how they were impacted and shows their lives. But it's an almost arbitrary choice, whereas they could have done a series where each episode spent 30 minutes with those people and a couple minutes with Michelle Obama. That might have been a better show, but It's still interesting and inspiring on its own level, but I don't think this is the kind of thing that's going to change anyone's opinion or anything.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Hey, is it streaming on Netflix now?
It is now available on Netflix, and it's the director's first directing effort. She is primarily a documentary cinematographer. She was one of several cinematographers on last year's great College Behind Bars, which was on PBS, and which is a great documentary if people haven't seen it. She got a fair amount of access, so she's following Michelle Obama around. You know, Barack Obama makes a guest appearance. Sasha and Malia make very, very, very brief guest appearances. This is not the kind of thing that they like to do. But, it's under 90 minutes. So if you're actually a fan, check it out and enjoy it. If you're not, it's not going to make you happy. So.
Okay. All right. I'm a fan. So I will definitely watch it.
89 minutes. No
Got
pain.
It. Got it. All right. That's it's on Netflix, and it's called Becoming. Hey, I have not watched it yet, but I've seen the commercials for Upload, it's weird because it's Greg Daniels, right?
Yeah.
It just seems.
What's the weird part?
Well, the genre, what it feels like doesn't feel very Office-like, but I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But talk a little bit about Upload, which is on Amazon.
Upload. which is on Amazon. It premiered, I think it premiered 2 weeks ago and has already been renewed. So if you wish to check it out, you certainly could, and you could feel confident that it will continue to be a series going forward into the future. And it's futuristic. It's set, I believe, in 2033. And it's about a world in which you can have, if you die, you can have your consciousness uploaded into a virtual afterlife. And in that virtual afterlife, you can enjoy the perks of heaven, if your version of heaven includes in-app downloads and additional purchases through heaven. But you can also still communicate with people in the outside world. So it's a story kind of about a young man who dies in a car accident and gets uploaded basically into his girlfriend's family's portion of this particular kind of upload heaven. And he begins to suspect that his death may not have been accidental. And so it's partially a murder mystery. The murder mystery is not really all that interesting, but it's also a very sweet romantic comedy. Robbie Amell is one of the stars. He's done a bunch of stuff on the CW. Andy Allo is the female lead. She's primarily a musician, and she's terrific. And so there's this sweet rom-com that's happening. She plays basically his angel. She plays customer support for the heaven, technological heaven. And so basically she's like, you know, Siri or Alexa or whatever, and you call for her if you need help with anything. And they set up a really cute friendship, and a lot of the satirical stuff about the capitalistic nature of this heaven and how it no longer has anything to do with good or bad or ethical choices is really, really funny. And it's kind of this amusing thing that Greg Daniels, of course, co-created Parks and Recreation, and Parks and Recreation has, as a series, spawned three different shows in the past 5 or 6 years about the afterlife. So The Good Place, obviously, and also Forever on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see how Parks and Rec, which is this show that has, you know, such a clear sense of right and wrong and morality, how it spawns these three very different looks at the afterlife and the pros and cons. And yeah, it's a little bit sloppy as a show, but what works about it works really, really well. And some parts of it are extremely funny, and some parts are extremely sweet. It's been easy watch. You know, 10 episodes, mostly half hour. Some are a little bit longer, but it's pretty solid. You should definitely check it out.
Okay, so that's Upload. Okay, on Amazon, and there you go. Wanted to catch up with that one. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and he joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. If you have a TV-related question or comment you want to get in here, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. More TV talk with Dan coming up right here on 720 WGN.
And I still can hear him say, oh, talk to me, so you can see what's going on. Say you will sing your songs forevermore, ever.
All right. Gonna be some sweet. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio on a Thursday morning. We are here until 4. Coming up in a little bit, we are going to talk about shows that we would like to see do a virtual episode. We're going to talk about rock memoirs, and we'll pay tribute to Frank Sinatra, who passed away on this date in 1998. All of that and more. Our phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you, 312-981-7200. We're talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we got a lot more TV to talk about. If you have a TV-related question or comment, give us a call, 312-981-7200. All right, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Hey, I see that you talked with Liz Feldman, who is the showrunner on Dead to Me, which is a show that I love. How was that?
Have you watched the second season all the way through yet? Or
not all the way. Not all the way through. Not all the way through. But I've started it.
Had to make sure because the show is so very much about the twists and turns.
Yes, it is. I mean, there's a twist and turn in it like every episode. It's just a joy to watch the two actresses, the two leads, Linda Cardellini and Christina Applegate. They're just so great, and I've loved them both in everything they've done, and they're really top notch in this.
And to me, they are pretty much the reason why I'm watching the show at this point. I do not really care all that much about the twists and turns, and I'm not really sure that the show has all that much creativity when it comes to the twists and turns, but it has a lot of creativity in the way it treats the friendship between those characters, and the performances are both so wonderful. Liz Feldman joined us on the TV's Top 5 podcast that I do at THR, and she just talked a lot about those exact specific details, you know, when the cliffhangers come into play, what the shape of the season was that she initially pitched Netflix, how difficult it was to get people to understand the specific jumble of tones and genres that she was going for. She talked, of course, about the two actresses and how wonderful they are and what a pleasure it is to give each of them these just wonderful, meaty roles. Honestly, whatever my thoughts on the mechanics of the plot of the show are, I like watching those two actresses so much, and a lot of the supporting performers as well. We had a good chat with her that week. Also had a great conversation with Henry Winkler, who we talked to about the Gary Marshall special. That was a two interview episode, and Henry Winkler has a reputation as being among the nicest people in the business, and certainly he could not have been nicer. Struggling through our various technological challenges of quarantine era, whatever. So he talked to us from his living room, showed us the flowers he had just gotten his wife for their anniversary. He was such a nice guy, and on the interview did his excellent impression of Gary Marshall and told a couple stories I hadn't heard before. So, definitely worth checking out. I would say specifically for the Henry Winkler interview, which is really one of my favorites.
That's great. Okay, that's TV's Top 5 at the Hollywood Reporter, and you can listen to that right now as we are speaking. Yeah, Henry Winkler, you know, whenever I see him on talk shows or anything like that, and he just seems like the sweetest guy in the world, like the nicest guy in the world, and that's the reputation that he's always had, and you can tell. Anytime I watch an interview with the guy, it's like, man, this guy's reputation, I think, is true.
And I've talked to him many times over the years in different capacities, whether it was for Arrested Development a couple times, Out of Practice, the sitcom he did on CBS. You know, he works steadily in a lot, and he is indeed always this totally amiable, friendly, great stories. He's good people. I am, and you know, to hear him talk about it, it sounds as if a lot of his being good people comes from the influence and the standard set by Gary Marshall on Happy Days right from the beginning. Yeah. So, you know, if you have a good mentor, it really helps you become good at what you do.
Yeah, no question about it. And I love him on Barry. He's so great on Barry. And is that show coming back? Well, nothing's coming back yet. But
I don't think that's one that got into production, unfortunately, or got finished. So yeah, I think Barry is one that we're going to have to wait on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got to wait on a lot of stuff. I just didn't know whether or not HBO had, before all this, renewed it. You know.
Oh no! It definitely was renewed. It just I don't think that I. Yeah, it's like so many shows. Yeah. It's whenever they can get back to work on it.
Yeah, I miss that show. I really love it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you've got a TV question or a TV comment. Dan Feinberg is here. 312-981-7200. Okay, very, very curious about the TV adaptation of Snowpiercer, which is a movie that I absolutely love, and I've seen the commercials and the trailer for Snowpiercer, the TV show, and it looks pretty great. So I hope they don't like ruin the concept.
Well, it's not pretty great.
Oh, okay.
It's also not awful, and there's something remarkable about the fact that it's not awful, because the journey to get this one to TV has been appropriately circuitous for a story of a train carrying the remnants of human society that is circulating the globe as a metaphor for economic stratification. In this way, it's a lot like Upload. This is one where they put it into pre-production 5 years ago.
Oh.
They went through a series of different scripts. There was an entirely different pilot that was shot and ultimately discarded, except that a lot of the cast members were recirculated into the new pilot, but in different roles. I use Wikipedia often just to sort of keep track of cast lists and characters, just because sometimes I forget the names of people.
Sure.
And the Wikipedia page currently for Snowpiercer, I assume this will change once the show actually premieres, all of the information on it is based on the original script, I believe, from Josh Friedman, that hasn't been a part of the show in years. And so basically the characters who are mentioned and the descriptions of the characters and their roles in this universe all completely different from what's actually in the show that's going to premiere on Sunday on TNT. So it's kind of a fun alternate reality glimpse. The series itself, it basically stars Daveed Diggs from Hamilton as one of the poor people who live in the tail of this super train that is circulating the world. The people in the tail were not supposed to be on the train at all, and they're kept in isolation, doing horrible, horrible things to survive. But Daveed Diggs' character is a detective, the only actual detective on the train. And so when there's a murder in third class, he gets called up to investigate it, which he uses as an opportunity to get information on the structure of the train to foment revolution. It's a pretty good cast. Any cast with Jennifer Connelly is, at the very least, pretty good. She plays the head of hospitality for the train. And there are other good people as well. Allison Wright from The Americans. A bunch of other people who you will recognize. It's a character actor smorgasbord. It takes a long time to lock in to what its story is actually going to be, because it's not all that interesting if it's just going to be a murder mystery. And then it takes an even longer time to lock in on what its tone is going to be, because the movie is a really, really funny movie.
It is.
It's an action movie, but it's really a satire. And for the first two episodes, at least, there's no humor at all in the series. And that's not good. Around episode 4 or 5, I started finding things that I was interested in the show. And I think Jennifer Connelly is really good. I think that some of the production values are interesting. I think that Allison Wright, she's probably playing the closest to the Tilda Swinton character from the movie, at least in terms of tone. And so she's very weird and very funny.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it were funnier. I wish it were smarter. I wish it were savvier about what it is. But it's also, given the amount of scrapping and reconfiguring and whatever that they had to do to get to the Earth at all, it could have been a total disaster. And it's not that. It's just kind of there. And sometimes it's decent and entertaining, but a lot of the time it's sort of slow and dull, and much more so than it really should be.
If they were having trouble getting this thing on the air, and now that it's going to be on TNT, did the success of Parasite have anything to do with that, you think?
Ultimately, it didn't, I don't think, because it had been put into production years earlier. I think that the success of Parasite definitely kept it in the conversation in recent months, and probably
raised the bar, because also HBO is in the process of trying to figure out how to do a TV limited series version of Parasite, which
what?
Is either going to be a disaster indeed with Adam McKay as writer, creator, or something to that effect, but also with Bong Joon-ho involved to some degree. He had no particular involvement here. The showrunner ultimately ended up being Graham Madsen, who worked on Orphan Black for its entire run, and, you know, did a lot of very good work there. And he's actually our guest on this week's TV's Top 5 podcast. And I think he said that he had a couple of conversations with director Bong about the project, but there was no day-to-day role for him.
Okay. All right. So that's Snowpiercer. And that debuts on Sunday, correct?
Yes, correct.
TNT. All right. We have a caller here if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. Here's Dash on WGN. Go ahead, Dash.
Yeah, I would love to learn more about if the Umbrella Academy on Netflix is coming back. I thought that was a gem of a show. And then what the heck happened with New Mutants that it's finally getting dropped and that it wasn't in the first place and why they can't drop it right now during quarantine?
Yeah. All right. Couple of questions there, Dan. What do you got?
Okay. What was the second part of the question?
The first one was Umbrella Academy, and the second was
which?
Yeah.
Is New Mutants.
Yeah, New Mutants is the other one.
Yeah. Millions.
New Mutants.
Oh, New Mutants. Oh. New Mutants. that's getting into movie territory, and New Mutants did just get a new release date, so that one has been on the. Basically, you could put the production cycle of that one next to the production cycle of Snowpiercer.
Yeah, no, that thing that thing has been around for years, and now that they're not even really releasing movies, I don't even know if that movie's going to even get a release.
Well, the funny thing is that they claim that they're actually giving, you know, what they announced yesterday or today was a theatrical release date for it, as opposed to saying it's just going to premiere on demand like everything else does. So they're still pretending it's going to come out theatrically. I don't know why.
That's weird.
It's very strange. As for Umbrella Academy, it was renewed. I think that I could be wrong on this one. But I think that one was renewed early enough and put into production on the second season early enough that I would guess they actually did finish that one in time. I could totally be wrong, but just knowing the timetable, it was definitely renewed. So that part for sure,
okay.
I can say correctly. But I think that it might be one where Netflix is just in post-production on it and it's going to have it to premiere late summer or fall, you know, whenever it's actually finished. But renewed, and we'll see.
Okay. All right, Dash, thanks for the call. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us. And if you have a question TV-related, 312-981-7200, comment about TV. Hollywood Reporter is where he writes, and you can check him out at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And phone lines are open if you want to jump in with a TV thought or question. 312-981-7200. Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 4 o'clock. And we're keeping you company, we're keeping you informed, and we're helping you get through this, and we're all going to get through it together. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking TV. If you have any TV comments or questions, phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dan Feinberg is my guest. He joins me every other week to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we got more TV to talk about. Okay, Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
So there's certainly a lot of TV out there. And are these the stuff that's been backlogged? Is any of that? I mean, how much do you know? How much material that they actually have that they can air, that they can put on, that was finished?
It's entirely different for each entity. So something like Netflix, Netflix puts things in production long in advance because they have to be able to debut all 10 or 13 episodes. And so they can't be in production on a season as the season is premiering, which broadcast shows do all the time. So Netflix says that they have basically all of their shows through to the end of the year finished, like as in finished in production. So they're in post-production on lots of things, but Netflix could have, well, it being Netflix, they could have 50 original programs set to premiere between now and the end of the year. In contrast, a broadcast network, something like Fox, they ordered several shows for mid-season this year that they were expected to either premiere in April or May or possibly the summer, that did finish production, and that Fox simply decided at a certain point we're holding these. So Filthy Rich, which is a show that stars Gerald McCraney and other various people, was supposed to premiere at mid-season for Fox. It's being held to fall, and it's done. So Fox will have at least Filthy Rich and something called Next, which stars John Slattery, and they'll have a bunch of animation because animation is on a completely different production timetable.
Right, right.
But in terms of the thing, the returning shows that people like, they all just stopped. They're you know, so a show that you love that finished its season in April or May, it's going to be back whenever it's back, and yeah, it's going to be back whenever they can figure out how to be in production on things. So everyone's going to have different rules. There is still going to be original television programming, and probably a lot of it on the streaming services and on premium cable, on your HBO and Showtime and Stars, et cetera, will be roughly what you expect it to be for the next few months. It's going to be when you get to the fall and you start expecting, okay, it's September, that means the broadcast season is about to start again, that's when things are going to get really potentially kind of bleak. Yeah. And I don't think they know what that's going to look like yet.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. Have you been watching the shows that are doing shows that are where everybody's quarantined, for instance?
Well, like which kind of thing?
Like, All Rise is one of them.
I did. I watched the All Rise episode, and that's the only Parks and, for the most part, the Parks and Rec special, which
right,
is its own creature.
Yeah.
But in terms of actual in-season, in-production dramas and comedies, what All Rise did was fairly unique, and they did it reasonably well. I think that All Rise, which is a, you know, it's an ABC legal drama, or
right,
CBS legal drama.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. But, I think it's an above-average legal drama, but I thought that what they did in their quarantine episode was a really good way to do something like that, because it felt really and truly like an episode of that TV show. It didn't feel like a stunt. It didn't feel like they were trying to prove a point. It felt like someone said, let's write a story that actually organically brings in this stuff that's happening. And I was very impressed. But if the logistical hurdles that they had to overcome to do a fairly straightforward 42-minute television episode, you just wouldn't want to do that on a regular basis.
Right.
You might want to do it once or twice as an experiment, but man, the effort they put into a basic 42-minute episode of television was remarkable.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Now, I've been Saturday Night. This is past Saturday Night Live was the season finale, wasn't it? I don't even know. I can't.
It was the end of the season. I don't know if you can call it a finale because they weren't even announcing when they were going to do these at home episodes. So, this one they announced, I think they were going to do it 2 days before, 3 days before.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of one of those, okay, it's catch can. We're doing the very best we can, and when we have material and we think we can do it, we're going to do it. So, yeah, it was the finale. I don't think they're planning on it, not doing it again. But maybe if it comes to be summer and everyone's still locked in, they'll be like, sure, let's do another, because it's not like we're going anywhere. It's not like this is going to be a hiatus where everyone's going to run off and do movies. God, everything is so strange.
Yeah, it is. I watched the SNL. I love Kristen Wiig, and that's obvious a statement, but she was great. I thought she was great. I actually thought it was better than last week's At Home episode.
I think the one I liked best was the second one. Still, I think I thought the second one was the one that felt closest to being kind of fully realized.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first one felt like them saying, can we do this? And the answer was somewhat yes. And then the second and third ones felt closer to being real episodes of SNL. And it definitely, it wouldn't shock me if they decided to have one of these pop up in July if the state of the world made it possible. Because, again, who knows what anyone's doing?
Yeah, it's very strange to watch, obviously. But I admire the effort, and I thought some of the material was pretty funny. And again, Kenan Thompson is a national treasure. I just want to say that
he's terrific, and everybody I thought was in good spirits and being good sports about all of it, and really doing the best they could. There was not a malicious bone in anyone's body when it came to trying to do this. It was just, let's try to be amusing for 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad they tried it, and I would be perfectly happy, you know, come June. I think we would all be, June or July, we'll all be starving for that kind of program.
Absolutely.
So we'll do it again.
No question about it. I hope they keep that option open. I also think it's hilarious that Pete Davidson is quarantined with his mom. I just find that so incredibly amusing.
I love all of their quarantine situations and trying to figure out who is where and who has apparently been saving their money and who has roommates who we can't see off camera, that kind of thing. It's amusing and it's humanizing because, let's be real, they're just doing what we're doing. And that's the joke.
And the late night shows, you know, the late night guys are I think doing some fun stuff. I think I think Colbert is coming off the best in this quarantine situation, and it's just it's so interesting. And I mean, like you, I like to look in the background and see, you know, what their houses look like and stuff like that. And I like that Seth Meyers is playing with that, because like he keeps stacking up Thornbird copies of the book The Thornbirds on the table behind him.
No, they're funny people, and seeing how they function and how they refine their humor to a lack of audience response has been a lot of fun. You know, seeing how, let's be honest, John Oliver doesn't need anyone with him to be hilarious. He nails it so completely. I feel sometimes like Trevor Noah's rhythms have changed in dramatic ways, and I like what he's doing, but I still miss the audience energy with him perhaps more than I miss it with some of the other people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, John Oliver is just great. I mean, he's unbelievable, and his show has just been remarkable. Anyway, it's interesting to watch. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us, Hollywood Reporter, TV critic, and if you want to join us, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for any TV-related question or comment. And we'll get back to our conversation with Dan about TV after this. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above a wet downtown Chicago. It's not pouring, but it's raining, so be careful out there if you're out on the roads. It's Nick DiGilio, and we are here till 4. Hey, we are talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He talks with us biweekly, and everybody's stuck inside, so there's plenty of TV to recommend, plenty of TV to talk about, and let's get Dan back here. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Let's talk about Solar Opposites. Tell everybody about this one.
Solar Opposites is a new Hulu comedy that premiered last week. It's an 8-episode sci-fi animated comedy from Rick and Morty co-creator Justin Roiland and longtime Rick and Morty producer and writer Mike McMahon. And it's a story of four aliens from a distant planet who crash-landed in a United States suburban neighborhood, and a year later are still around, and the spacecraft is still wedged into the roof of their house, and they're just going through their lives while also dealing with the possibility that the pupa, the little creature who accompanies them, might at some point destroy the world, but maybe not. So it's sort of it's the latest variation on an animated family comedy, and it's fairly Rick and Morty-ish. Justin Roiland voices one of the two main alien characters. Thomas Middleditch from Silicon Valley is the other one, and so it feels Rick and Morty-ish initially without kind of the wacky interdimensional twists and turns that make Rick and Morty so amusing. But around episode 4 or 5 on that one, they start going for bigger swings, and that's kind of a thing that happens in animation. You have to kind of set the ground rules, and then you can do bigger things. And by the second half of the season, I was really enjoying it. It's much more adult than Rick and Morty. There's a lot of swearing. There's some fairly graphic violence. There's even a little sex. By the time I got to the end of the 8-episode first season, and it's already been renewed for a second season, I was fairly amused by the things they were doing, and I was able to distinguish between the things that were very Rick and Morty-ish about it and the things that were more unique and independent about it. So I got a kick out of it by the end of the first season.
I'm a real big fan of Rick and Morty, so I was looking forward to this, and I'm glad to hear that it comes together. And that's Solar Opposites.
Yeah.
Is it on Hulu right now?
It is on Hulu right now. 8 episodes, first season, and the second season is already in production, in post-production. So it will come along down the road. Who knows when?
All right. And let's see. One more thing we want to talk about is a thing you wrote about to set aside common TV prejudices. Tell us about that.
This is something that's been wanting to write for about a month and a half now. And the thesis was basically because everyone is sitting at home, and obviously many people are working from home, many people are, you know, raising their children and doing other things, but people are also still watching a lot of TV. And I hear with some frequency, oh, I've run out of things to watch, which usually means that I've watched Tiger King 3 times and I can't bring myself to watch it again. And seriously, if you've watched Tiger King 3 times, God, there's just other stuff you should be watching. So I went through a number of the different things that people usually respond to me with when I say, have you watched ... and the reasons why they haven't watched. So kind of these prejudices that people have, like, I didn't watch this show because I don't like the title. So I didn't watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend because the title makes me uncomfortable. Or I didn't watch Cougar Town because it sounds like a bad show. And so my typical response to that one is, how many TV shows do you watch 100% because you love the title of the shows?
Yeah.
Like, who watches a TV show for 250 episodes because they think, oh, it's a great title. The show itself, but I love that title.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the alternative to that. You know, if a trusted TV critic, and it doesn't need to be me, it can be whoever your trusted TV critic is, says that, I don't know, that Terriers on FX, now FX on Hulu, is a great show, just because the title Terriers doesn't mean anything to you, doesn't mean you shouldn't watch it. I mean, just stop calling it Terriers. Call it anything else you want to call it. It's a good TV show. You're not watching the title.
Right.
So other things, other prejudices that people have, people feel uncomfortable with the idea of TV shows that quote-unquote get better. Because everyone's like, oh, I don't have time to watch 5 episodes because it gets good at episode 6, or to watch season 2 because that's when it gets good. But guess what? Now you got that time. So yay, huzzah. And honestly, of the shows that you hear get good, only one or two of them really started off bad. You know, for the most part, shows that are good started off reasonably good. Some of them improve organically, because that's what everything should do. But it's the rare show that's like Parks and Recreation, where you're like, okay, that the first season didn't work. It was the first pancake in the batch. Throw it in the garbage, move on. But you can start at the start of season 2. It's fantastic.
Yep.
So there are all of these shows that I hear these things about, and my answer on almost all of them is it doesn't really. It's not like it starts off bad. So something like Succession. I don't think Succession starts off bad. You just have to get used to it. So give yourself that time. Something like The Leftovers. The first season is a little bit up and downy, but it's got wonderful moments in it. Hey, it's a great time to put in that time. So that's one. Some people, another prejudice is shows that ended after a season. So you hear people say, I'm not going to start investing because I know that, it's just going to get canceled. It's never going to end. A lot of my favorite shows are shows that lasted only one season and that maybe didn't have the perfect ending. But I still love those shows. You know, I would never tell anyone that just because Freaks and Geeks didn't have a season 2 that takes away anything from the 19 episodes of season 1.
Yeah.
So now's the time to settle in. Watch that show with that bad title. Watch that show that maybe requires a few episodes to hook you. Watch that show that only lasts for the season, but it'll give you 10 hours of really good TV. Now's the time.
Yeah.
Do those things.
Yeah. Got a lot of time. Got a lot of time to watch TV. So, all right. Yep, and on all of this is you can read the whole article at The Hollywood Reporter and at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, thanks very much for hanging out with us. Stay safe, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it. Stay healthy yourself, sir.
Okay, buddy. See you later. There's Dan Feinberg, everybody.